Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I want to start this by stealing another really good segment from Friendly Pod of ours.
Okay.
Being the Blood and Mud player spotted.
Really hoping that's what you're about to say.
So I kind of want to turn this into a little bit of a game. So I'm in Nantes right now, and you're in Nantes as well.
Indeed.
However, I went home for a week since we last recorded.
I've been in Nantes for a week, or near Nantes for a week. We went out to the coast, like right by the sea. It was nice, middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Nothing around. Closest supermarket was a bloody 40-minute walk. Weird little place, weird little town on the coast of France. Nothing around. You would walk for 10 minutes and see one person.
Was it nice?
It was lovely. It was lovely.
Good.
Yeah.
Good, that's good to hear. Whereas I went back to Nottingham for a week. I went back home for 7 days.
Indeed.
Even though it was Lyon that I went from, very confusing. But I flew out to Nantes today from Stansted Airport. So I got the train down from Nottingham to Stansted. And so as I got on the plane at Stansted Airport, there was somebody sat in front of me on the plane who was very lovely, who was at the touch tournament in Nice.
Oh, wow.
Who said, my kids were at that tournament and I watched on the sideline. Are you Will? And I was like, oh yeah, I am. Had a little chat, and there was an Argentine fan who was coming over for the game.
Oh, amazing.
Had a little chat with those guys. And then, out of the corner of my eye, I saw somebody else on the plane further down in seat 16D. And I want you to guess who I might have seen that was a famous rugby person.
16D, a clue?
No.
It's not
just
a replacement hooker.
That was the seat that he was sat in.
Okay, I appreciate you remembering that.
Yeah. I was on the plane for an hour and 10 minutes. Like, I had some time to kill.
So it'll be a famous rugby person coming over for the World Cup. It won't be a player. Won't be a current player.
Not a current
someone
player.
Someone retired.
Yeah.
A pundit, perhaps?
Yes.
Pundit, journalist, Topsy Ojo.
No, that's not a bad guess. It's not a bad guess.
Okay, probably someone who's working independent rather than working for ITV.
Not working for ITV, you're correct.
So, could possibly be S4C, but probably not.
Who this person is doing the work for.
It's not S4C. So it'd be one of the papers, I presume?
No.
No, BBC?
Yes.
Okay.
You're getting warmer.
Brian Moore. No, Brian Moore's working for the Telegraph now.
No, you're getting colder.
So, it's not one of the BBC podcasts?
Indeed.
People. Nicky Robinson?
No, however, I did later see him at the baggage hold.
Of course you did. Josh Navidi?
It was Josh Navidi.
Josh Navidi!
I saw Josh Navidi putting his bag into like the luggage hold at the top. On the plane.
I think he's good at that.
Yeah.
Him, that's like lifting a bag of pick and mix.
So I was talking to these two people in front of me, and I was like, holy fuck, that's Josh Navidi, just like 10, 15 rows in front of us.
Wow.
On the other side of the plane. Because his hair sticks out.
Oh,
it's very distinctive. Yeah. And
he's also bloody enormous.
He's massive. And his hair looks incredible in person, incredibly well kept. And I toyed with whether to text you about this, but instead I texted our mum.
Yes.
Because
this is the important one.
Josh Navidi is probably her favourite player ever, maybe.
It's up there, Ugo Monya, obviously.
Yeah.
Big favourite. Josh Navidi, absolutely.
But 2 minutes past two this afternoon, I sent her a text saying, Josh Navidi's on my flight with 4! To which she replied, no! With 6! I then said, positive sighting, his hair looks absolutely incredible in person. She replied, well, of course it does. No wonder he couldn't shave it, even for Smiler. I imagine he's being kind to dogs and children too. My only sorrow is that Warren only spotted his true potential 3 years after I did. And I said, if I bump into him after I'm off the train, I'll say hello for you. And there was a point where like we got off the plane, and I did spot him, like see him again walking off. And I thought, I'm not going to be that guy who goes up to him and goes, you're my mum's favourite player.
You could have been.
I could have been. At passport control, Nicky Robinson was stood like two people in front of me as well. Nice. I was like, oh, that's Nicky Robinson.
He's all right. He's sound, Nicky Robinson. Yeah. I did the Scrum 5 pod with him. Decent bloke. Yeah, he's all right. You know, very lovely, very nice.
But
Makes time for you.
I did like that Scrum 5 had just sent them in like regular, you know, sat in separate seats as well, not paid for them to sit together.
They're doing the podcast, not the TV show. Yeah. The budget's slightly lower.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously Josh Navidi stands out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And it was great. Just, there was a very small pocket of rugby fans sat near me on the plane, which was mostly full of rugby fans, mainly Welsh ones, going like, holy shit, Josh Navidi's over there.
Yeah.
And it was great.
But from listening to the Scrum 5 pods as well, Josh Navidi is apparently enjoying the attention he's getting, because everywhere he goes around nods, everyone's going, holy shit, it's Josh Navidi.
Yeah.
Because you spot him instantly because he's Josh Navidi.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. He's extremely distinctive. Whereas I had to do a double take on Nicky Robinson.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, that is Nicky Robinson.
He just looks like an impressive man.
Yeah. I didn't see Gareth Rees-Owen.
No, I think he's been over here already.
Has he? Yeah. Okay, I think just been over the whole time. Yeah. There was a lot of time throughout the flight where I just like look at Josh Navidi.
Yeah.
You know when like the plane starts to
Did
go
he have headphones?
He had AirPods.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So, you know,
I just thought he'd be a big over-ear headphone man.
Yeah.
He loves his music.
He does. Loves his DJing. And there was a part of me that thought I could go up to him and say like, look, you're my mum's favourite player. You're her desktop background because it reminds her to work hard and enjoy occasions, which is so lovely. I think that part of Wales' success in 2019, a big part of it came down to you.
Mm.
And also, I really love that you were there for your mate who was throwing up at the Stereophonics gig that someone spotted you at of Blood and Mud. When you got player spotted
no,
for that.
I mean, this is nothing on Jess Hayden's Josh Navidi anecdote, but go and listen to a past episode of Blood and Mud to find that where Jess was a guest, because it is unbelievable as an anecdote.
Yes.
So, the idea of this podcast is we're going to talk about some of the games from last weekend. We haven't worked out which ones yet. We'll see how we land. You've obviously been back home.
Yes.
I've been somewhere with no Wi-Fi, no signal, no nothing.
Yeah.
It made the whole thing very difficult. I was briefly ill as well. I'm all right now. So, we're bloody back to run over rugbies. The last rugby we saw before you headed home was Uruguay against Namibia.
Yes, we went to that game.
Yeah.
That was in Lyon. Lovely
yes.
stadium. We spoke about this obviously with the Wales-Australia game. We had really good seats for that game as
yeah.
well. Like we splashed out like £20.
Yeah, the whole thing was like £25.
Yeah.
So that's all right. It was a really smart idea then to put them in that stadium, because here's the thing. So those two teams played in Montevideo couple of months ago. They
yeah.
played maybe late July, I think it was. And that game sold about 7,000 seats in one of the two host nations, right?
Yeah.
This game played in Lyon in a 60,000 seater
yeah.
stadium, which feels bigger as well.
It's sort of 49K sold, tickets, didn't
I
it?
I believe it was 49K, yeah.
How incredible is that?
Which is unbelievable.
Basically everybody that we spoke to at the Wales-Australia game said like, oh yeah, we're also
yeah.
going to the Uruguay game on Wednesday.
And you walked around that, right? And yes, there was a lot of travelling Uruguay fans, like huge number of Uruguay
yes.
fans travelled over, which is amazing. And like, that wasn't the case in Japan. And I know part of it's logistics and so on. It's easy to get to France, perhaps. But the way rugby's clearly exploded in Uruguay, and we've talked about this repeatedly on this podcast, has been amazing to see. The fact that their fans are travelling over in such numbers is hugely encouraging.
Yeah.
Shows just where they can go and where they can build from here. But yeah, huge numbers of Wales and Australia fans that hung around, huge numbers of All Black and Italy fans that were there a few days early. We spoke to two guys that had come over from the Netherlands just for this one game. They'd driven from the Netherlands that day.
Yeah, and then going back there. That night.
Yeah.
Like, how incredible is that?
Which is commitment that I admire enormously.
Yeah. And the game didn't disappoint. It was
no.
a really good game. I think we saw, aside from a couple of sloppy cards at the end with bad tackling technique, we saw the best version of Namibia.
Yeah.
And I think it's... Oh, so often, partially because they just piss through qualifying and then get drawn into really difficult pools.
Yeah.
Partially because they always get given shit turnarounds. They're always the team that are last to play their first game and first to play their last game. And yeah,
19 days between their first and last game.
It's insane. But there's various, kind of qualifying factors that mean we often don't see the best side of Namibia.
No.
And there was a part of me thinking in this World Cup we wouldn't, because Uruguay, I thought, would completely shut them down.
Yeah.
And Namibia really expressed themselves. They were brilliant.
Yeah. You also had the fact that they rested their team, which in past World Cups, they haven't done. They've kept
yeah.
a strong side out throughout, and they've maybe changed the bench a bit in order to give everyone a bit of a run.
And that's
right?
it. And then maybe change it for the last game,
yeah.
regardless of who it is. They'll just give everyone a run.
I'll say it. Rested everyone against France, because they know we're going to get slaughtered here anyway. They sent some lambs out to the slaughter, and we're putting a full focus on this Uruguay game. And so we got to see this supercharged Namibia. You know, they scored the quickest round of the tournament.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
See you, Mark Talaya.
Yeah. To keep mentioning him, our good friend Ignacio Chan, who's been doing phenomenal coverage of the South American nations. Really worth following on Twitter.
Take a drink
really
at
finding
home.
Everything. Yeah. But he did a piece about this game. He did a few pieces, one of which mentioned that Uruguay have been practicing that move that they ran first phase off that first line out of the game, 1 minute in. They started practicing that back in Uruguay. They knew they were going to run that first phase of this game from like 2 months out.
So overthrow the line out to your eight.
Yeah.
Jack, snap it back to the 10. Then they essentially run like a kind of X shape off there.
Between
and then
the
throw the missed ball to the fullback, like kind of between
and then
the
they
two.
Have, the fullback and the winger coming in, and then, you know, one of them is, depending on where the winger goes, one of them is a real option, the other one's a support option, and then they've got the two centres can follow
and
as
you
well.
And you can choose, four players you know, which one you're going for.
And seeing as, you know, the way Namibia defend with the centres being like, all of it is on Dazel normally.
Yeah.
Like Dazel runs the entire defence for Namibia. He was obviously banned for this game, wasn't available because for touching Antoine Dupont, and that is a no-go in France at the moment.
Yeah, and rightfully so.
Rightfully so. What's it been like to be in a country where Antoine Dupont's fitness isn't the second story of the news every single week?
Oh, mate,
it's
been so weird going around corners and not seeing Antoine Dupont's face.
Yeah.
No one knows rugby's happening in the UK. We'll talk about it another
time. That's a whole other thing. But yeah. But no, genuinely, when you put on the news in the evening, how Antoine Dupont's doing is a headline every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day.
So it should be.
Absolutely. And it should be in all countries, regardless of whether they're in this Rugby World Cup. But yeah, that move then, lovely stuff, designed really to exploit a team that defends incredibly heavily off 13. Plan was always to run it first phase off the first line out, and they mess up the pass. It goes straight into Mouton's hands, he runs it in under the post.
Yeah.
Which is the absolute nightmare scenario. Something you've been practicing for 2 months, 3 months maybe, that you then balls up right away in the first minute of the game.
Mouton's read on that is fantastic as well. The fact that he knows that it could go to any one of those four players.
Mm.
As you say, he can pick any option, Arata at nine. It doesn't mean he does pick any option.
Yeah.
And yet it bounces beautifully for Mouton, who runs it in. And it was a brilliant start to the game.
Gershwin Mouton is a player who's flown under the radar, but I think he's had a fantastic World Cup.
I think
he has done everything asked of him and more. Like, he's come in for Chad Plato, who's obviously Namibia's star player, probably. You know, was their best player in the previous World Cup, at least.
Yeah.
You obviously got, you know, Stevens Comrade as well, who missed this game as well. But Chad Plato, really their standout player. Probably their best
players. Yeah.
And Mouton's come in for him, and he's just been fantastic.
He's
just done
really taken the opportunity with two hands.
He's added value for everything he's done. Like, every touch, he's made more meters, he's been faster, he's defended incredibly well. I really hope he gets a contract in MLR or Pro D Dart.
It's difficult to think of a player whose stock has risen more than him in this group stage, you know? Somebody who was pretty unheard of, you know. I maybe had heard his name before this tournament, and now I look at him and think, like, he's excellent.
Yeah.
Like, he is a proper, like, money ball signing that you can
absolutely
make.
Absolutely. In terms of players that stock has risen, Manuel Ardal.
Yeah,
that's probably the highest through the roof signing anyone could make.
And Touchwood was recording this before Uruguay All Blacks, but he's not had a bad game yet.
No, he's been fantastic across the board. Ignacio Chan did say he's spoken to him and he hasn't had any offers from Europe yet. He says he's still committed to going to Miami Sharks. That is not going to happen.
Yes, I reckon just more zeros are going on the end of that buyout clause for the Miami Sharks.
An offer from Sale or from like Bayonne or someone by the end of next week.
Yes, easily. He's ridiculous. I want to keep talking about Namibia for a little bit.
They just keep building.
Yeah.
And I think that was the really outstanding thing was like, we saw them against Italy. Their try is so well taken. In that game, it's such a well-constructed, careful try that is genuinely good attack in a way a lot of people have been very sniffy of, you know? And it's like, someone asked me on Twitter the other day, do you think the current Portugal team would beat the 87 All Blacks? And I think this Namibia team would put like a heavy score past the 87 All Blacks.
Who were
like,
great.
50 odd points, yeah.
Like, as far as classic sides go, you don't get any better than the 87 All Blacks.
Right, but you look at that 87 World Cup, right? And this is a conversation we've had before off air plenty of times. But I think New Zealand and France would score points in response, maybe Australia.
Yeah.
Where I think the other teams at tournament would
Australia
like,
would keep the score lowest because they kicked the most.
Yeah. Yeah. They would
had a genuinely good 10 in liner.
Yeah. Where I think that New Zealand team, right? Like, people being like, oh, don't you worry about the rucking and like the Namibian players wouldn't be able to handle the way they rucked back then. You're like, well, no, like.
Because the technique's been sorted out.
Yeah. But like, all eight players ran to every ruck.
Yeah.
You know, like. The first ruck.
Now you can have two people seal off on their own.
Yeah.
You know?
The average ruck nowadays takes between 2 and 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the average ruck then took between 30 and 40.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
It's a very different game.
Naturally.
It's a whole other thing, right?
Grant Fox and John Kerwin and Craig Green and all those guys will score points past you. Obviously.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. But yeah, you're right. Namibia would put a hefty scoreline on.
The standard of Namibia's play has been really high across the tournament. They've just struggled with that. They've come up against the All Blacks and France. And those have been really difficult games.
It's the group of death for Namibia.
Yeah. That Italy game, they showed what they can do in attack, and they really got to double down here and actually build on that.
I'm so
glad.
And
that second try, the JC Kraling try,
I'm
is
so
even better.
Pleased for Kraling. I think he's been one of their most consistent players for a decade now.
For a really long time.
Like 2015, he came on. I think that was where he first grasped that opportunity, kind of on the world stage. And scored a try against Argentina, I believe, in 2015.
Yes.
And was playing centre, has moved out to the wing since then. I think he's had a really solid World Cup, just hasn't had any real opportunities until that game.
Yeah.
And I think he was really good against Uruguay.
Yeah.
Took that try brilliantly. It was Richard Hardwick set him up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hardwick, again, had a good game.
Hardwick's ball, fantastic.
Yeah.
And just really, really well worked. I remember because we were right on that side and seeing that and seeing it's the number eight and going, oh, yeah, this is going to be a difficult eight. You know, the eight's probably going to bomb the pass. And he doesn't.
No.
He hangs it perfectly for Kraling to run onto, hit full pace. And then again, you see the cover coming across and you're like, oh, is he going to? No, and he does. He just backs himself and goes to the corner.
His dive is fantastic.
Yeah. Kraling's the sort of player who you expect to have learnt over a long career of narrowly missing out to cut inside and just take the position. But actually, he backs himself and goes to the corner. And that's perhaps why he's been such a special player for Namibia for such a long time.
Yeah.
Is that he has been on a
Kraling
now? 32.
32.
32. Okay. One of those weird players who's like just bumped around playing semi-pro rugby for a really long time.
Yeah.
So probably can play for another World Cup cycle almost.
I'd hope so. I'd hope so. Because he's so underrated in that he's, you know, not really talked about, but he's been, as I say, one of Namibia's most solid players for such a long time now.
But like,
three World Cups.
Yeah, it's a lot of bumping between like the Velvica club team, the Eastern Province Kings. You know, he's kind of played for a lot of like Curry Cup sides and semi-pro sides and
so on. I want to see him play not at a World Cup, you know.
Yeah.
I want the chance to see him play in the other 3 years of the calendar.
Exactly. And it'd be great if he gets a couple of shots. He's a sort of player who, if Federale 1 was what it is now when he was younger, he perhaps could have had a solid contract there.
Someone take him as a medical joker during the Six Nations or
and
something.
The thing is, like, it sounds to me to say the French Third Division, right? But the budgets in the French Third Division are bigger than the Welsh regions of the URC.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and the probably Premiership size inside the year.
And like, there are Portuguese and Chilean players playing there, you know? Like,
it's a really high level. It's a really, really solid level. But yeah, I thought Namibia just really showed how solid they've been, how good they were, and got out to that, you know, 14-0 lead and then to, you know, 17-5.
Yeah.
And managed to just keep some pressure on and really build that. Like, that was maybe the best half they've ever had in a Rugby World Cup.
Definitely. And they broke the record for the most points they've ever scored in a game by 1 point, overtaking Tynes Kotsur's incredible haul, taking it to 25 against Fiji in 2011. They got to 26 in this game. Before we turn to Uruguay, though, I must say we were both very disappointed by the lack of Tian Swanepoel drop goal attempts.
Yeah, well, this is a genuine thing, I think. Both we can be disappointed because we're big fans of what happened in 2011.
And big fans of Tian Swanepoel.
Yeah,
well.
And Tian Swanepoel is perfectly set up to do exactly the same thing once again as, you know, maybe against Fiji in 2011 where they took 3 drop goals in the first 20 minutes and it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like watching George Ford nowadays. But this team is also perfectly set up. Like, you saw, actually, against the All Blacks in France, they got into the opposition 22 plenty of times. Like, their 22 entries is actually reasonably high across this tournament.
Yeah.
Just they've scored from a very low percentage of them. They've taken very few of their chances. If they're taking drop goals, suddenly they're putting some pressure on oppositions.
Yeah.
Probably not enough to win games, but enough to make teams start to panic.
They have a kicker who can do that, who's capable of that.
Yeah.
And can manage games, you know, who has a really good head on his shoulders in Swanepoel, who's had a brilliant World Cup, by the way.
Yeah, he's been superb. But they've got the chance to be doing that. They've also got Laubser as a second kicker in option as well at fullback. So you've got your setup to do this. And I think Alistair Gottsier, very much the thing he was criticised with the Springboks, was he was very attack-minded, very, very focused on, you know, running, on playing very phase-heavy rugby, which he's carried over to Namibia, even though it's no longer in vogue. Like, you know, 4 years ago, the style of rugby Namibia playing was really working for teams.
Mm.
And I think nowadays it's mildly updated in that Namibia want to keep the ball for long phases at a time, really put pressure on and really build
draw
phases.
Penalty advantages out of people.
Yeah. And just like
some teams pull off
in hand.
But
the thing is, right, like 60% of tries at this World Cup, I think 60 plus percent of tries at this World Cup have come with the first two phases.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the way the game's going. Like, everyone kicks, starting with France, like France kick everything on the first, like second, third phase. It's gone on massively from the way the Springboks played in the last World Cup, kicking to 4 or 5 phases. So long phase counts.
And that's like
really
upper boundary for Springboks, you know?
Because defence is set so quickly, defences work really well. And also, like, if they're comfortably opposition's kicking, you can bring a extra man up and 40 man back line.
Yeah.
Back 40 man main line. So yeah, it just like, it's become a real force. And the way Namibia are playing would have been more effective in the last World Cup. But you know what? We got to see it work really well here. And actually, some of their attacking plays have been far nicer, people can give credit for.
Definitely.
And really good to see them just get a proper game, as you say.
Yeah.
Get the most points they've ever scored, come the closest they've ever come to winning a game. They led at halftime for the first time ever. It was a huge performance.
In a World Cup, I want to see every single team's selling point.
Yeah. You know?
And we finally got that in the end. So good on you, Namibia. But we do have to give a lot of credit to Uruguay because they are a team who deserve to win games by margins as healthy as that one was, you know?
This is nothing. Santiago Arata, the scrum half, who was obviously the player of the match in the end, he spoke about this. He spoke about how this Uruguay team has never been favourite. Like, there's never been a Rugby World Cup match before where Uruguay was favourites to win it. Like, they caused an upset against Spain in 1999, which was a minor upset, and a major upset against Fiji in 2019. And this is the first time they've ever gone in expected to win a game.
Yeah.
And they struggled with that in the first half.
They did.
They didn't know how to deal with that. And yet, they still had the composure to come through, to pull ahead, to go on and win this game.
Yeah, they panicked so much in the first half hour of that game.
Yeah.
And they clearly realised, like, actually, no, what we're doing isn't wrong. You know, our game plan and our structure isn't wrong. We're just throwing bad passes, you know.
Yeah.
We're just botching up lineouts. We're giving away penalties, you know.
We saw it in that first minute, right? Like, they are a better pass off scoring 1 minute in.
Yeah.
Right, and running away.
It's a 14-point turnaround there at the start. And they completely stuck by their plan. And that was really good. They didn't panic whatsoever. And eventually, you know, either they drove over the line, you know, Herman Kessler, I think, was brilliant in that game.
Superb.
Scored his try really well off that maul. Obviously, the space eventually opened up for Santiago Arata. I'm so glad we got the Arata try.
Yeah, we finally got to see Arata do his bullshit thing.
Yeah.
He got one touch of that against France, where you thought it was going to happen. It almost led to a red card.
Yeah, Taufa Fenua had to decapitate him to stop him from making
really,
a break.
Really, really interesting that Arata said after that, card was given as a yellow. If he dived, he thought it would have been red, and he's dived for everything since.
Yes,
like he's been going down so easily since, and I really respect that from him.
Yeah.
Also, the moment with the ball.
Yes. So there was a point where Chewy Unevi, who was the Namibian captain on the day, went in for a high shot, got a yellow card in the end. But whilst the referee was reviewing it,
it was due to be a Namibia scrum.
Yes, before the penalty was flagged up by the TMO, and Louis van der Vesthuizen had the ball on the sideline. Yeah, line out. So, yeah, it was ready to throw it in.
Yeah.
And Santiago Arata was just constantly nipping at him, saying, like, no, it's going to be our ball. It's going to be our ball. And going at him. And Van der Vesthuizen was just putting the ball behind his back, just putting it out of his way, like, lifting it above his head, all sorts. And I just watched that for about 30 seconds, just thinking, like, this is really entertaining. And I just tapped on the side and said, just look at Arata and Van der Vesthuizen down there, because this is really entertaining. Everybody else in the stadium was looking at the big screen.
But this was the thing, right? It was still at that point where it said Emirates TMO.
Yes.
Up on the big screen. It hadn't yet brought up the image. So at that point, it then froze over to the image of the referee, and he then stands there going, oh, can you get the image up, please? And then probably Ben Whitehouse comes up and goes, yeah, I can. Just hang on, my mum's bringing me some crisps. And then his mum brings him some crisps, and then they stop, and then they get the image up, and then they show it four times.
Yeah.
And this entire time, Arata is like, and the Namibian team are so pissed off, they're starting to pass it between them, like, you just deal with this, like, bloody imp speaking Spanish really annoyingly to me.
That's it. Like, after I'd told you about it and you started watching, and we'd had a bit of a giggle about it for about, you know, 30-45 seconds, I then got my phone out and started recording it and put a 45 second clip up on Twitter. That's how long this was going
on
for. Yes.
World Rugby haven't found it.
World Rugby haven't.
It's some rugby people can watch.
I will double check this, because genuinely that should not be a question.
Well, like, but last time they pulled down a clip of someone watching it in their living room, because could see a little bit of the screen.
It's still up.
World Rugby haven't found it.
They
oh my God, there's
it.
Footage of like a
they
rugby ball
arrested me.
That World Rugby haven't pulled down.
Yeah.
This is incredible. Are you Wayne Barnes?
I must be. I'll keep an eye on that, because, you know, the night is young.
But yeah, Uruguay, we've probably talked about on this podcast and with videos and everything more than any other team in the tournament.
Sure.
But been superb. And I really hope they have a good game against New Zealand tonight. As we're recording this, you know, tonight.
And yeah, Arata scores that try every single week in the top 14. So glad to see him do it in the World Cup. So it can go on the highlights compilation of the best tries in the World Cup. Because
absolutely.
It will.
Absolutely. And they came through that really well. I think Carlos Deus has been phenomenal.
He's been fantastic, hasn't
21
he?
21 years old, number 8, carries for so many metres. I think he's got a
top
14
contract coming. Makes 1,000 tackles.
Yeah.
No matter how long you play him for.
But the point Arata made as well is everyone talks about how we need to play the top nations more regularly, and they do. You know, Uruguay only played one tier one game between the two World Cups, between 2019 and 2023. The other thing Arata is, we need more of us just playing in the top 14 and playing in the big divisions.
Yeah.
Because they have two players playing in the top 14. They have a bunch of players playing in MLR and SLAR and the kind of other
pro
leagues.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they only have two playing at the absolute highest level of club intensity. Yeah,
it makes such a difference.
It makes such a difference. Manuel Decker is a different player to 4 years ago.
Yeah, like, he was very good 4 years ago, don't get me wrong. But he has comfortably been not only in Uruguay's leadership group this time around, but he's comfortably been one of the best players. I'd say other than Ordao, he's probably been their best, most consistent forward.
Yeah. And this is the thing, right? I want to see these players playing all the time in various big leagues.
Yeah.
I think it's good for the game. I think it's good for those teams. I think it's good for those leagues to have cult heroes building.
Yeah,
know?
Definitely.
Like, I think it's a thing, just to look at it from the world's perspective, right? People were never more connected to the clubs and the regions than they were when they had these tier two, the Blaine Scullies, the Rod Snows, the Jeff Hasslers, the kind of tier two players who came in were unbelievable, really loved and committed to those clubs. Those players make them as much as the local boys who play for them, you know, the Josh Turnbulls of the world who play 800 games for
the other day,
one of those teams.
I remembered about, remember Eric Lund?
I remember Eric Lund. What a player.
Like, he was
Techno
such
Viking.
A great player.
The Techno Viking
was
Eric Lund.
An extreme cult hero because he was a Norwegian international who was like genuinely of top 14 standard.
Yeah.
And like, we need more of that, man.
Exactly. It's just good for rugby. Like,
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's something you love looking at Premiership football, right? And going like, oh, these players are from like 10 different countries.
Yeah.
You know, in like the 25-man squad. You know, I love that. And you look at like, you know, as an Ospreys fan, you look at the Ospreys squad, right, and there's maybe three nations they're from.
Yeah.
You know, and it's...
it's so bland.
It wasn't the case 10 years ago. Jeff Hassler, bloody Leslie Klim, you know?
Yeah.
Iconic names. Chauncey O'Toole, names we all adore. But yeah, I don't know. I want to see these players all the time, regularly.
It's like, if you're Cardiff and you're signing an uncapped South African 10, you can do that anytime, man.
Yeah.
Sign a Portuguese fly-off.
Mate, John Laporte is better than Tinus de Beer.
Of course he is. He's better than most fly-halves.
Yeah. I mean, should we talk about the Portugal game?
I think we have to. I think we have to. There's a lot to unpack in this.
Mm.
Firstly, I love watching Portugal play.
So much.
I love watching them sing the anthem.
So much.
And I love looking at Thomas Appleton.
So much.
He is so handsome.
His hair, glorious. His hair. Almost making it front to Mac be missing.
His teeth.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I mean, he is a dentist.
And exactly my point.
But that's the thing. He must be going to a different dentist.
Yeah.
Because he can't operate himself.
But he is so perfect.
He must be the second best dentist in Lisbon.
Yes, I guess so. But this Portugal-Australia game, the first thing I'm just going to get out of the way, we're not going to talk about the fucking ref because...
who gives a shit?
Like,
yeah.
That's not a narrative in this
so
game.
It was so boring.
That's not a part of this.
I'd forgotten about that as well.
Yeah, sorry to bring it up, but that's not a part of this.
Yeah.
So if that's what you want to hear, then stop listening because we, first and foremost, love watching that Portugal.
Yeah.
I'm speaking on behalf of you. I don't know this because we've not really talked about this game that much, but... I loved this Portugal team. I loved watching them play. I think, in a way, they were brilliant in this game. Mm. In a way, they only have themselves to blame for losing it.
This is the thing, right? Yeah. Portugal, in this game, I think, were both superb, but also so far from their best.
Yes. I'd say they're like a 7 out of 10.
What we saw in this game
for them
was Portugal showing that this team is capable of raising their standards to tier one intensity, right?
Yeah.
And we saw that in patches against Wales, but patches where they did fall off and they weren't quite there. What we saw was them able to do it for basically 80, not quite 80 minutes, maybe 75, 70 odd minutes,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Of being at that standard. There's not many of the tier two teams have been able to do that this tournament.
No.
You know, I think we've seen the Pacific Islands across the board, obviously Fiji, but Uruguay as well, I think across the board as well, have been fantastic in terms of raising their standards.
Yeah.
Portugal were able to do that almost effortlessly here.
Yeah.
Having had one game against Wales to really lead into this and really build up to this.
And that was like their only tier one exposure.
They played Italy last year,
yeah,
and they played Japan.
Right.
In 2021.
Which is still a lower level than,
yeah,
you know.
They played two tier one nations, both of which were fielding full second 15s.
Yeah.
You know. They play then a fully changed Welsh team.
It's nothing the same as,
right. And the other thing is,
the Wallabies' first team in a World Cup.
Yeah. That's not like Uruguay, where Uruguay played these teams in the previous World Cup. Portugal hadn't played a tier one nation in like 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, before those two games.
They had
like,
no
they
prep.
They were enormous.
For this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've had very, like, Chile had absolutely no prep playing tier one nations. Portugal had a tiny little bit and they raised their standard really quickly. But what we saw, right, was that they were capable of doing that. But also, they're still not a mature enough team to put those games to bed.
Yes. They played to the same standard as Australia, but I don't think they played to that standard particularly well.
No,
in
exactly.
a way. Like, they didn't take, and they left so many opportunities out there. And, I mean, for instance, the big glaring point in the game is when Pedro Betancourt gets his yellow card, goes off the field for 10 minutes. They had no idea how to defend with 14 men at that tempo. Because they've not been exposed to it before.
With the 13 missing,
yeah,
in particular.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Like, obviously, Jose Lima is a fantastic player, but Betancourt and Appleton have been such a fantastic combo.
That is the combo.
Defensively, as much
them.
As anything.
As much as I want to see Rodrigo Marta getting a go in the center, I just think Betancourt's been so solid for
that
them.
That game against Georgia, Pedro Betancourt was absolutely unreal, particularly in defense.
Yeah.
Like, just as an organizer, the two of them are so smart and so in sync, and they're able to manage that defense so smartly, and suddenly with half of their defensive organization gone,
yeah,
it looked like they only had half of the defense.
Yeah. And, like, bear in mind, the Wallabies are an extremely good attacking team, you know. They took all of those tries so, so well. They were absolutely unplayable for that 10 minutes while Betancourt was in the bin. Yeah, they were just incredible in attack, and Portugal had no idea how to adapt to that.
Yeah.
On one hand, you can say, if Portugal are given that regular tier one exposure, they might learn to kind of, you know, come to that.
Okay, if you played this game 10 times, Portugal are winning at least two of them.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah. But on the other hand, They should be higher than that.
Yeah.
Because sure, they let in all those tries. How the hell were they planning to get the thing over the line after sort of the 8th minute when Betancourt put it down? You know?
And this is the thing, right? I think a lot of the narrative around this game has been very patronising to Portugal.
Massively.
And the standard to which Portugal, like Uruguay before them, in this World Cup have played to, says to me they are capable of playing at a higher level and we should therefore treat them the same way we treat Japan or we treat Argentina or we treat Italy or we treat, you know, leading into this World Cup, Wales or England, you know, as
Scotland, you know.
Teams who are capable of playing at the top level, like Australia, you know, and maybe they don't do it every week. Maybe they're not World Cup contenders, but they're capable
and
of playing against those sides.
By the way, that's not having a go at people, because we genuinely weren't to know that before this World Cup, that they could achieve that standard, which I think is an interesting point, because I don't know the answer to my own question, my own answer to this question, my own interpretation of this, but the way that Portugal have approached these tier one sides is extremely unusual and unconventional. You know, we often see something like, I don't know, like Uruguay maybe against France, for instance, where they're playing their absolute guts out. And it sounds patronising to Uruguay to say, like, there's a damage limitation to it, you know. But it's not, like, we knew during that game that Uruguay are not as good a team as France, but they could have turned them over and won that game, for instance.
But why it wasn't like Tonga in the last World Cup, where every game was trying to keep the score down.
Yeah, exactly. Well, nothing like that, nothing like that. But why is it, do you think, and again, I don't know this myself, that Portugal have managed to somehow achieve that the other way around, that they've somehow managed to go, you know, even if our players aren't quite as good, which some of them are as good, and, you know, the exposure we have to this level, the experience we have isn't as good, how come they can just play to that standard even when they are bombing tries and letting in tries with 14 men? What do you reckon that comes down to?
But I think there's an awful lot of factors here that do kind of start to add up. Mm-hmm. One is, yes, this team hasn't played much against Tier 1 nations, but they have a couple of times.
Yeah.
They've now played 3 games against Tier 1 nations at senior level. But also, right, they play to a really high standard in the 20s. Right.
It's a good point.
So a lot of this Portugal team came through at under 20 level together. You had John Malporteo, you had Rafael Storti, you had David Wallis, you had a bunch of them all came through the same under 20s team and were phenomenal together. Right. And they played again, you know, their Storti infamously scored like 10 tries in 6 games or something.
Ridiculous. And they were all from like 70 plus meters.
Yeah. but it meant they got to play against all the best under 20 sides in the world. You've then seen the likes of, you know, Storti then get signed from there to go and play for Stade Francais. Yeah. They've had like a gradual raising of standards. I also think a lot of it is in the way they've approached the games, just in terms of like mentality, just in terms of mindset.
They've approached them completely without fear. Like, how do you think Lajusque himself has drilled that into the likes of Portea and like Samuel Marks to just go like, you know what? No, we are the team who's going to control this and somehow have a better mentality or stronger mentality, I suppose, than Australia and Wales.
You look at Portugal post-COVID, right? And they start with having a pretty good rugby group championship.
Yeah.
Right? They then manage in 2021 to arrange this game against Japan, where they obviously have the attack on. They're about to score the try that could win it with 2 minutes to go. And on the overlap, they throw the interception pass to Yamanaka, who runs it in from 70 metres and wins the game and secures it for Japan. Right? That is obviously a devastating moment. But when you pull that apart, when you come in on the Monday morning and you look at that performance, you go, we are as good as the team that made the quarterfinals last time.
Yeah. Right?
So they then build that into the next campaign they have in 2022. They draw with Georgia and Tbilisi. First time Georgia haven't won a game in Tbilisi since like 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
You know, like a huge record they had there. And then that starts to roll eventually into the qualifying campaign.
Point.
Right?
Yeah.
They then just about struggle by and qualify with the last kick of the game against the USA. Scrape into the World Cup in the most dramatic but also the most like heartening and confidence building circumstance, and suddenly you go into 2023, right? You go into World Cup year itself on an absolute high. Suddenly, right, the year before they are losing to Romania by heavy scorelines. They beat Romania. They get a bonus point win against Romania, beating them by like, I think, 16 or so points in the end.
Yeah.
That then rolls on to this summer where, yes, they fall over against Australia, right? But they give them proper game for like 70 minutes. And I think that's a factor.
Yeah.
There's an argument made that Australia A team is as strong as the Australia team that went. It's, you know, had Bernard good. Foley in it. Yeah. Had Reece Hodge in it.
Philippa Dungunu.
Yeah.
Like, Lockie Swinton. Like,
proper, like, Test international players.
Yeah.
And they held their own and they were in the game to win that for 70 minutes and then they kind of fell apart later.
Sure.
And I think you can take a lot of confidence from that, from the fact they then built
that's
on that.
That definitely helps.
The other key game, I think, that needs to come up is they played the USA again in a World Cup World Cup warm-up. And, but only for themselves, you know, because the USA aren't here.
Yes.
But they battered them.
Yeah.
They absolutely smashed them. And a year ago, they were drawing with them. And suddenly, nothing has changed in this team. They've got the same coach. They've got the same players. The players are 8 months older. But the confidence has gone through the roof and the belief in that, right? And rugby is a fundamentally emotional game.
Yeah.
And I think we have seen this Portugal team just raise in confidence. And if they can continue getting these games, I think there's a very good chance that they start beating Georgia next year. I think there's a very good chance they win the Rugby World Championship in the next 5 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
And I think there's a very good chance that
they should expect to.
Yeah. There's a very good chance that they win a game in against one of the big teams if they get one of those games in the next 4 years.
Yeah. How often do you forget that they are the bottom ranked seed in this pool?
Yeah.
I regularly do, let alone the fact that they were the last team to
qualify.
They're
the bottom ranked team in the tournament.
Whole World Cup.
Like, in terms of seeding, in terms of getting in, they're the bottom team. They're not the bottom ranked team in world rankings, but they're the bottom ranked team in the whole tournament.
Yeah. They were the last to get in on the very final repechage.
Yeah.
Know? How often...
That was an like, upset that they got in.
Like, yeah, exactly. But even if you like cast that aside, let alone that, how often do you forget that they're the bottom ranked seed in that pool?
Oh, constantly.
Because I constantly think like they're third or fourth.
I remember they're the bottom ranked team in the pool. But also, it's the point I made on Twitter and people were being really angry about this, but like this is the most even pool that's ever been in a Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, I love this pool.
The distance between the best team and the worst team, being Wales to Portugal, is so small.
Tiny.
So small. Like, the margin was 20 points, right? When they played each other. And I think that's a fair reflection. And that's the margin between the best and the bottom.
Who would have ever thought that we'd have a World Cup game where it's Australia against Portugal, Portugal scored the first try and it's not a fluke.
Yeah.
It's them properly breaking down the defence and the Portuguese crowd all going to each other, we're going to win this game.
Yeah.
You know? And the fact that Portugal came off disappointed, that Appleton said, you know, I'm proud, but I'm really upset with how this game has gone.
Yeah.
And he said that against Wales, you know, he said that against Georgia. And clearly this team have high standards, as you said. I think it's really interesting the thing you say about them gradually building not only the confidence, but their exposure to this kind of level. I think that weirdly does line up with the Japan 2015 model, where they beat South Africa. And then Michael Leitch kind of came out and said, yeah, obviously I'm really pleased and it's the biggest resort in history, but I almost don't see that as an upset.
Yeah.
Because that's what we've been preparing for. Like, we've been hardened to the fact that that's going to happen. We've been told that that's going to happen by Eddie for several years.
Mm.
And then after that, you know, they take one more scalp, then one more, then one more, then they get a buttload of tier one experience and then qualify to the quarterfinals the next time round.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying for a second that that's going to happen to Portugal next time round, but those players will be 4 years older and will hopefully have a load more experience at playing at that level. And, like, clearly they have a team full of players who will just take that and run with it. Like, they will bite your arm off at any tier one experience. And, like, you say that, you know, they played against Japan, they played against Italy. Clearly they have learned more from those games than any other team has with such little exposure.
The other thing is, though, that they play against Georgia very regularly.
Yeah.
Right. And Georgia are playing against the tier one teams. So they know the level you've got to raise to. You know, it's one handshake away from being playing tier one.
They can trace over Georgia.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And that is the advantage the European teams have. Right. And I think it's been, we talked about Namibia earlier. The African qualifiers have no chance because the only African team that's up to the top standard is South Africa, right? And they play their regular games against New Zealand, against Australia, against Argentina.
I think they do all right in Africa qualifying.
Yeah. But the point is, right?
Springboks.
Namibia come through that really comfortably.
Yeah.
There's no competition for them.
Yeah. Like they every facet of the game, like scrum, line out, kicking, like attacking, defensively, they're better in everything.
Yeah. They don't have any challenge,
yeah.
right? Where Georgia are thankfully getting, this is about to change with the World League, but they're getting some games against the Tier 1 nations. They're getting enough games. You know, in the last few years, they played South Africa.
Yeah, they're getting drip-fed those games.
They've played England, they've played Ireland, they've played Scotland a few times. They have, you know, played Wales twice. They played Italy and they've beaten Italy and they've beaten Wales, right? They have played more of the Tier 1 nations than they haven't in the last 4 years, Georgia.
That's great.
And that means that then there is a drip feed down across the continent, across bloody rugby in Europe. You know, taking the fact that Romania, the Romania team that Portugal were playing up until, you know, Abjot comes in for Robinson in December, had also played Argentina in the last year and had also played Italy in the last few years.
Yeah.
And it all starts to build and it all starts to improve. And the standard is so much higher in the Rugby World Championship than it is in Africa and it is in anywhere but South America, you know. Which is a whole other situation. The way they managed to raise that level by raising each other is really impressive and working together in order to create an overall greater product. I just think this Portugal team is going places.
Yeah.
And I think Portugal, this Portugal team will turn Portugal into a Rugby World Cup regular.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've said this before in the podcast. Yeah. Like, they should expect to qualify for the next one and probably in a European slot rather than...
They're looking at Europe 1 or 2. Yeah.
Yeah.
Regardless of it being expanded, they're going to qualify, you feel? And yeah, the ceiling on this team is so high.
Unbelievably young backline.
I don't see a world in which they don't beat at least one Tier 1 nation before this team retires.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. This is such a special generation that is hopefully going to be groundbreaking. And with that, I want to talk about some of the stuff that happened in the game.
Yes.
I want to talk about Geronimo Portea.
Mate.
Who, possibly the man of the match in that game. Yeah. I mean,
Rob Valentini was the official man of the match, and I can't argue with that because I think he's unbelievable.
Rob Valentini's been so good in this World
Cup. He's
been
Australia's best player by a margin.
Yeah, by quite a long distance.
And he has been for a few years.
Yeah, he's such a good player, so solid. But let's talk Geronimo Portea. Yes. So you made the point before this that he's probably been the best 10 of this pool stage.
Yeah.
And I think I agree with you.
I think I'd stand by that. If we were picking a team of the tournament so far, I'm picking Geronimo Portea.
I can't think who like competes with him. I think Richie Mo'unga's played well.
But also he hasn't played every game.
Yeah.
You know, he's played...
And also, he's not had the most difficult games.
He played all right against France.
Yeah,
and then he played... Well, against a shit Italy team, which we might get onto at some point.
Yeah, Namibia. Like,
yeah, and then he came off the bench against Namibia, and he hasn't played Uruguay yet. Like, I don't think you can put him in. But as you say, he's the other one that comes up. Like, Jalibert, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, like, we can't really
Sexton's
comment on...
Sexton's been fine.
Sexton and Russell, like,
yeah,
we don't know.
They've been fine.
How well
across
played.
The board. Geronimo Portea...
George,
you know,
Ford, I guess, is the other one,
George
isn't he?
Ford's played really well. Bigger and Anscombe have both played well. Though Anscombe was less flashy against Portugal, I guess, but phenomenal against Australia. But the thing is, Geronimo Portea in every single game has got better and better.
Yeah, he has.
He is 22 years old, right?
That man is such a baller. And, like, he can manage games, man. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know he had that in him before this tournament.
Yeah.
I think it's probably because for Portugal he's had limited kind of games where he's had to go full game management mode. Because the ones that have been tight have been open.
Samuel Marx has generally done that.
And like, that too, yeah.
That's been the secret of their success, has been Samuel Marx as a kind of Ruan Pienaar figure. at 9, or Greg Laidlaw figure at 9, is able to manage the game and run everything and take a lot of pressure off his 10.
Yeah.
And it's meant Porteia, over 2.5 years in this Portugal shirt, has slowly built and learned to control the game.
That's it.
To the point in which he is now. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, now an unbelievable game manager.
Yeah. Like, he's always had, like, an amazing arsenal of attacking kicks and being able to just boot it long, you know?
Yeah.
And, like,
he was a flair player. Like, you came into him thinking him in the same way you do Rodrigo Fernandes. And I said this beforehand, right? The difference between the two of them is they both have a similar level of talent, but Fernandes took the game up at 12 or 13. Porteia took it up when he was 4.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And that's also the big difference a lot of this.
But that's the thing, like, he's had this again, huge, like, amount of weaponry in his attacking kicks, but he's got Marx managing the game at 9, and then he's got Guedes at 15 as well to kind of bail him out. And between those two, he's not had to manage too many games, but he's just shown that he knows when to kick, when to attack. And there were a few times where my heart was in my mouth, and I was thinking, like, they were going so overambitious with this attack in that first half, like, even when they were doing well and before they were blowing chances, you know. But he seems extremely composed, and he's not afraid to get overruled by Marx.
The fact he's tall really helps him as well.
Because
he's a weird game line threat, right? And I don't think anyone in this tournament, any fly half, sells an inside ball better than him.
That's true. That's true.
There's something about the gangly way he runs that really tells
the
defence he's going.
As well.
Yeah.
Like, it helps when you've got Marta and Storti on the wings, don't get me wrong.
But the amount of people that bite on him think he's going to run himself and he drops it off inside.
Yeah.
Like, I say, Marta and Storti are both fantastic. Marta had a much better game, finally.
Marta was fantastic. Good, man. I was so pleased that he got a bit more space to run in. Like, virtually every time he got the ball, you thought, he's off here, he's going to do something. I just love watching that guy play. And, like, Storti as well. Like, Storti made Marika Corambete look like utter shit. Yeah. I think Marika Corambete, and it's untimely for me to say this because he's, like, retiring, but I think he's been one of the best wingers in world rugby for, you know, 6 or 7 years now, however long he's been playing for the Wallabies. I think he was dog shit in that last game. I think he got completely outplayed by Rafael Storti, which doesn't give me a great amount of pleasure to say because Corambete's been one of my favourite players. But, man, he just looked lost constantly, marking that entire back three.
No, I thought, across the board, though, you've just got fantastic performances from this entire team. Thomas Appleton, though, I think, had some phenomenal touches. His pass. The lead up to the Bettencourt try.
Oh, my God.
Is one of the best I've ever seen in my life.
It's nearly as beautiful as his face.
Yeah. And then Bettencourt's finish on that is great.
Yeah.
However, I also think there's some decision-making he makes and a few other passes he throws late on that are perhaps more questionable.
Mm-hmm.
I think you get into quite a lot of territory of, this player is fantastic, but there's one moment where they absolutely bombed the try.
Yeah.
You have exactly the same thing with Nicolas Martins.
Oh, man.
At 7.
Martins had an unbelievable World Cup, bombed that try.
Yeah, that was terrible. He had a chance to give the pass inside, he had chances to go early, he dives exactly the wrong time, he puts himself out. Poorly taken, would have put them back in the game right before time.
A player like him will learn from that. No doubt. Like,
and that's the thing, right? Appleton said the big learning from that Wales game was they didn't, when they played at lower levels, they've been able to make the same amount of mistakes they did and still stay in the game,
yeah,
you know, and be within like 10 points and be able to potentially pull it back in the last 10 minutes.
The tempo of the game isn't an issue for them.
Where suddenly, at that level, if they make the number of mistakes they did against Wales, which they did, you know, a lot of people praised them just because they were competitive because people weren't expecting them to be. People expected the Portugal team 2007 to rock up. They didn't. A new Portugal team, a very different Portugal team turned up. Because they were making those mistakes, suddenly the game got away from them and they were 20 points behind rather than 5 points behind.
At the time of that Wales-Portugal game, I said Portugal were like a 6 or 7 out of 10. I'm going to retroactively say they were a 5.
Yeah, I think they were a 5. I think that was like a solid, okay performance from them.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think in this Australia game, they've shown they can go another level higher in this World Cup, and they've shown they can go so many levels higher than what they did in Australia.
I think Portugal were a 6. It was a broadly positive performance, but I think their ceiling is so much higher than what they showed there.
Absolutely it is.
I think the mistakes, some of the, you know, decision-making, but particularly the way in which they couldn't take those tries when they had clear-cut opportunities.
Like that overlap with Guedes was just hard to watch.
As well as, like, Rodrigo Martins played plenty of 13 and they couldn't just slot him into the 13 channel. Like, they looked completely lost with him there.
That's such a good point. Yeah, because I think we said this when Bettencourt went off. We were just like, you know what, they've got a good replacement there.
Yeah.
And yet it just didn't work out like that.
Yeah.
And Mars is a much better player than that.
And I think, ultimately, a lot of this just cost Portugal, and they could have been so much better. They could have really landed there. And, yeah, I think all of this is on their head, but that's the really exciting thing, right?
Yes.
I don't mean to be down on them, because a really exciting thing is we have a Tier 2 nation, who's the last team to qualify, who are in a position now where they can kick on and start beating Tier 1 teams.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a genuine possibility that can happen in the next 4 years.
I'm disappointed they've not done it in this World Cup. You know, when they would be skipping quite a few stages of the plan if they won any of these games, you know, other than maybe the Georgia one. But we have to also talk about Australia, I think, because I think just as much as Portugal bombed those chances, Australia did brilliantly to hold them out and keep it until the 70th minute before they scored and really just narrow that clock before, you know, the window of time for Portugal to actually come back and win that game and score more. Like, if that game had 21 minutes, Portugal probably come back and win that.
Yeah.
But it didn't. Because Australia managed it really well. When they knew all of the momentum was against them, they knew how to just hold Portugal out and, manage the game. And I just think you have to give them credit, you know, in the way that sometimes we struggle to do with teams who've been battered or teams who've had, you know, upsets or whatever.
But it was. It was such a solid, comfortable... It was a very Eddie Jones performance, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what Eddie Jones has traditionally done with his teams, is they have very quietly pulled away.
Yeah.
You know, they've scored a lot of tries in a very unflashy way. And that was what the Wallabies did. They took their tries, they took their chances, they kicked an awful lot in order to put themselves in positions. It's the phrase, you know, you look at one of the big trends in this World Cup, right? And the team that's winning is the team that gets the more 22 entries rather than the team that's more clinical with the 22 entries.
Yeah.
To use Sam Lana's phrase on that, you've got to buy a ticket for the lottery, you know, in order to get in. Which is a great phrase that I tend to steal regularly.
Yes.
But the Wallabies bought an awful lot of tickets, right? Portugal did as well. But the Wallabies just, like, when they got into that half, they were scoring tries, so it felt like they weren't there as much. Like, if you look at the 22 entries, I don't have these stats in front of me. But yeah, possession and territory were fairly even, right?
Mm.
But I reckon if you look down, I don't have the stats in front of me, the 22 entries and the time in the 22s, they're probably similar number 22 entries, but the time in the 22 would be so much greater for Portugal because they're just not finishing their chances.
That's
they're just not taking
it
them when they get them.
Yeah. I think Fekete did well coming in.
Yes.
I think he took his opportunity. Obviously, Karevi came on quite early in the second half and found himself in the sin bin quite early. But
I continue to really rate Tom Hooper. I think Tom Hooper's a proper, like, proper top-end test player.
I think he's got a lot of potential. I think he's got some way to go yet.
But I think if Tom Hooper was a British, play for one of the British nations, people would rate him really high, really quickly.
Yeah, that's
but
fair.
But he's not a Australian type flanker.
Mm.
You know, people want a Michael Hooper. People want a David Pocock. They want a marauding kind of incredibly handsome guy. And instead, they've got an ugly little bastard on the
right side.
And like, they haven't had a player like that since Scott Fardy. And I'm really excited by them just
that's
having
fair.
Like a nuggety bastard
that
who works
fair.
Hard, isn't indisciplined, and just had an incredible motor on him.
Yeah, we were talking to Harry Dale about this, weren't we? And he was saying, like, we've had Hooper, before Hooper we had Pocock, and before Pocock we had George Smith.
Yeah.
Like, we've been stuck in this cycle
Phil
of
Ward
this is
well.
What, and for war, and like, even like Liam Gill he brought up, like, that there is a stereotype for what a seven should look like in Australia.
Yeah.
And perhaps it is time that that's slightly changed. I think it is slightly deviating with Fraser McWright.
Yeah.
But
he also is like a light version of that, and I wonder if that seven's going to come along in a few years.
Yeah.
You know, it's, people forget that maybe there was a year in between where someone filled in.
Also, quick word for broken Nick Frost, who, you know, seemingly couldn't run after 2 minutes into the game and somehow found himself hitting like an unbelievable amount of rucks and then getting subbed off at half time.
Nick Frost has been one of the most underrated players in this tournament.
He's really,
he's been great in every game. And watching that Wales Australia game back the other night, he was fantastic in that. For the Wallabies, like in a way that went completely under the radar. He's been really, really good every game for the Wallabies. Just really, I think, nailed himself on the team sheet.
Such a shame that he's been ruled out for the rest of the World Cup, according to the Wallabies' official Twitter account. It's like he's been ruled out for minus 6 days.
Because that's a thing, right? The Wallabies have had to hang around for this weekend because there's still a mathematical chance they can go through. And they don't have a game this weekend.
Yeah.
They're just hanging around for 7 days where they can't go home, where they've got to sit in their misery and eat croissants.
What's really interesting, it's not very often I'm going to call ITV's punditry interesting, but so I watched that, obviously. This is like my first weekend I've had watching games on ITV.
Mm.
But after that, they said to George Gregan, they spoke to George Gregan and Jim Hamilton about this and said, like, what do they do in that situation? And George Gregan said, like, oh, I can say with some confidence that they're going to be on the beers tonight.
Yeah.
to celebrate the win, because that's all they can do at this point. And they're probably going to get sent home if they know that.
Yeah.
And like literally the only thing they can do is just get hammered.
Yeah.
And of course George Greaven would say that.
Like, yeah, sure. But like probably is best you ask a Scotland player.
Yeah.
That, you know, they've got experience.
I think they've got literally the two most qualified people to answer that question right there.
So speaking of qualifications, we have none of them. But I think we'll pause it there.
Okay.
And we'll come back and we'll talk about other games. We'll probably do like a speed round going through the other games this weekend?
Yeah, there's a couple of games that, like, there was one of the games that I, like, paid a little bit less attention to. In fact, two of them, so.
Yeah, I think, you know, so Japan, Samoa, we can run through quickly. New Zealand, Italy, Argentina, Chile, I was at, and that was a lot of fun. That was a great occasion. Fiji, Georgia was a great game.
Yeah.
Then Scotland, Romania as well. Will and South Africa, Tonga also. I think we'll run through those on a separate podcast.
As many as we can.
Yeah, we've talked about the two most interesting games with the most to talk about, probably other than Fiji, Georgia, which can lead another one.
Yes.
So we've got to get going because bloody Uruguay about to play the All Blacks.
Yeah.
We will see you very soon for rugby. Do you have anything else to add, or did you tell it to Josh Navidi at the start?
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, just keep an eye out for Josh Navidi. If you see some very, very sharp-looking dreadlocks in Nantes, then say hello to Nicky Robinson, because I'm sure he feels left out.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.